Hey everybody, welcome to a special election edition of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I have seasonal allergies, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Coramdale Church and Pastor Chris Hellman of First City Church. And every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're talking about Decision 2016.
How the gospel connects to the questions and issues of this political season.
Lots of sniffing, maybe some coughing. So please excuse me.
Thanks for the disclaimer.
Ahead of time. Yeah.
Thanks for that. Hey, so there's only a few weeks left until the election. We record these podcasts a few days in advance, and so we were just talking before we turned on mics about the possibility that everything we say here might be completely outdated by the time this podcast releases, because there's been so many odd, strange turns of events in this election already. But here's what we want to engage. Honestly, we're sitting around the table going, I don't even know what we want to say about this election, but here's the pastoral need we're trying to fill. There's a lot of people asking me as a pastor, gosh, what do we do in this election season? How should I vote as a Christian? How should I think about the candidates? How should I think about the issues? This is a more perplexing election than we've had in quite some time, mainly due to the fact that both major party candidates have such serious flaws. And so people, I just think, feel a sense of paralysis about how am I to think through even how to cast a vote in an election like this. And so we want to honor that question. I'm thankful that people are here's what it says to me. Number one, Christians take voting seriously and take their civic engagement seriously, and that's a good thing. And so I'm glad people are perplexed because it means we're thinking about these things. I think we want to protect against cynicism, because millennials tend to be a cynical generation in the first place. And when you throw an election season like this in, man, it can just breed sort of an ugly kind of resignation, cynicism, despair. And we want to sort of try to talk about how the gospel actually gives hope, even in the midst of a season like this, and that our hope is not in the next 4 years of the United States of America, but our hope is in the kingdom of God. And look, like we titled our Revelation series a few years ago, God wins. That's not in jeopardy, regardless of who wins the election in November. So yeah, let's frame up the conversation this way, guys. So here's the sort of data that we're working from, listener, just so you know. There's been a lot of back and forth in the Christian intellectual community recently, based on an article that Eric Metaxas wrote in the Wall Street Journal, arguing that, and Metaxas has been, to his credit, very consistent on this, that Christians need to vote for Donald Trump, not because Donald Trump is a good person, but because Metaxas would say this is such an important moment for policy. Okay, and so he made this argument that Christians must vote for Trump and got crucified by some people very thoughtfully who read his article and were like, this is dumb, Eric. And so he got some serious heat, and that's good. He should have. Some of his points, I think, were rather flimsy. But so that's been the back and forth, is Metaxas essentially making this argument, hey, Christians need to think at the level of policy, not at the level of the character of the person. How are the policies of this leader going to affect especially vulnerable people? There many on the opposite side of that argument are saying, no, character matters, and the person we're voting for matters, and Christians can't vote for Donald Trump just in light of the tremendous, I don't even know what to say, the tremendous
character flaws.
Yeah, I wasn't even going to use the word flaws. I was going to say, this guy's a narcissist. He's a racist. He's a
misogynist.
Yeah, he's just a terrible person. And the more we know about him, the more we just go, God, seriously, this guy doesn't even have sort of a moral filter. And so, after the sort of most recent revelations came out, and things Donald Trump had said, you know, in the video a few years ago, which, by the way, that video was old. It's not like we didn't know he was capable of those things, but sort of the gotcha caught on film. I just think, man, there's not a woman I know in our church or in my life that I think could vote for Donald Trump in good conscience. Just like, nope, I can't have that person representing my daughter's future, or, you know, I'm not letting my sons look up to a man like that as a role model. So there's just these serious character issues with Trump. I think for most Christians, and I know there's a few who would disagree with me here, but for most Christians, Hillary is just not a viable option, especially because of how radical her views are on abortion. She's not just a pro-abortion candidate. She's like an aggressive, and not just abortion, but religious liberty. She's said things like people's religious viewpoints need to change if we're going to push forward the kind of abortion on demand that we hope to. And so there's very significant concerns about religious freedom with a candidate like Hillary Clinton. And so, sorry, that's sort of a long-winded intro, but here's back to the Metaxas article. A listener, before that article had even come out, a listener sent us in a really thoughtful question that we've actually got it posted on the wall here. We've been looking at it for a few weeks going, this is a good way of framing the question. His question is basically this: look, on the one hand, Christians seem to approach voting in terms of conscience, right? I need to vote my conscience. And so if I look at a candidate like Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton and say they're both liars, they're both deceivers, they're both manipulators, I can't in good conscience vote for either one. That seems to be the defining ethic by which we assess voting. This listener is asking, is that not an expression of expressive individualism, which we've also talked about on this podcast? Just this highly individualistic way of looking at voting and saying, well, if I have issues of conscience with this person, I can't vote for them. The listener is asking, doesn't it make more sense for Christians to think about voting in terms of policy and in terms of whose policies are going to do the least harm and or the most good over the course of the next 4 years, which would just cause for a different sort of calculus? And as I thought about that listener's question, which is really well phrased, it seems to me like that Metaxas is not the most nuanced person, but that seems to be the similar argument that he's making, is saying, look, when you think about the dangers of ISIS, when you think about the reality of abortion, when you think about religious liberty, he's making an argument that we're compelled to vote. Christians should be compelled to vote for a major party candidate like Donald Trump with all of his flaws and failures simply because his policies will do less damage. Now, we can argue about whether Metaxas is even right about that. I'm not sure that Trump would do less damage, but he's making that point, and it seems like he's trying to press Christians to think about this. Is it just how does my conscience feel about this candidate, or is there a broader, how does the policies that this candidate espouses, what would be the implications for especially Christians and for the culture at large?
And in addition to that, as presidents can come and go, you also have a Supreme Court that would last a lifetime. And so who's going to put the best Supreme Court candidates in there, right?
Yes. So the funny thing is, the only, in my mind, the only Christian argument for voting for Donald Trump right now is the Supreme Court. It's just like, you can't say, oh, Christians can look the other way when it comes to this man's character. The only possible calculus that could cause you to vote for Donald Trump would be, I'm so concerned about the future of the Supreme Court that I have to vote for a major party candidate who's not Hillary Clinton. That's Metaxas' whole article is basically, we can't let Hillary get elected or it's doom for America. And so that's most of his article. No one's making a positive case for Donald Trump. Lots of people are making a negative case against Hillary Clinton and what the Supreme Court will look like if she's elected.
So for the sake of this conversation, do we need to assume that hypothetically that Donald Trump really will do all the quote unquote conservative things that he has promised to do?
No, I think that's a terrible assumption. We don't have a clue what he's going to do.
Because that's the issue, is a lot of these arguments sway on whether or not Donald Trump can be trusted. So if, hypothetically speaking, let's say Donald Trump, everything that he says that he's going to do from a conservative perspective, he actually does. He's still the morally compromised dude that he is, but policy-wise, he is going to put America first. He is going to, you know, enact all these changes, which some of us would agree. It's like, hey, yeah, that'd be great. But at the same time, he's still this morally perverse dude versus, well, I don't even trust he's going to be able to do any of that, so we're taking a risk. So that's where I think some of this comes into play, is if we could trust him to actually enact the policies that some of us agree with, but still have to put up with his moral perverseness, versus he might not even do any of these things. And so if he's not even going to do any things, then why even bother?
Yeah. So here's my pushback on that. Or you're right. I think we need to assume that we're giving a guy the benefit of the doubt that clearly probably doesn't deserve the benefit of the doubt. But what you have in contrast to that is clearly Hillary, who's saying, I will do these things, which is I will proceed with more abortion, more women's rights, and I will make that happen for sure. So what's flying in the face of that is, you know, sure, Trump's just maybe waxing eloquently about all these great things, but
who's to say though that his moral failings aren't going to influence his policy down the road?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't think anyone's saying that. But here's what's interesting to me is I think what the people who are making an intelligent case for Trump are saying is American democracy is what would prevent him. Like, and it's right. Fascinating. I read this article about I think I mentioned this on the podcast about George Bush. It was a reflective on the 9/11 and what happened that day. Really, really fascinating article. I think it was in the Atlantic. I can't remember. But it was fascinating because on that day, Bush told everyone in the plane, we're going back to D.C. And the Secret Service officers basically looked him in the eye and said, no, you're not. At this point, our job is to protect your life. And so we will not do what you're asking us to do. We're going underground. And it was it just made you realize, gosh, everybody thinks the president has this massive power, but people of principle in moments of high importance will do the right thing. And so I think that that's where, you know, people that are making the case for Trump are like, we can't count on Trump to do anything, but we might be able to count on the Senate, the Congress, the cabinet that will be around him to not be the complete idiots that he is. And that might be sort of your checks and balances. And it's actually an interesting test of whether American democracy is built the way that we all learned that it was in high school civics and whether the checks and balances actually will work that way. So to your question, Chris, I don't think we should assume that Trump's going to do what he says he's going to do, but I think we can assume, but maybe the checks and balances of the system that we live in could mitigate the potential damage of his personhood. And that's where like the comparisons to Putin, though I think they're fair comparisons on a man-to-man perspective, they're not a fair comparison on a system-to-system right. perspective, because Russia is set up as an oligarchy, and so a guy like Putin can do whatever he wants. I don't think that would play in America. I think you'd be facing, in fact, there's already people writing and saying, there's people making the case of, let's elect Trump and then impeach him, and then we get Mike Pence or we get someone from the Congress. Or, you know, basically like, if either Clinton or Trump gets elected and does something stupid, impeachment's right around the corner. And that's, you know, that happened with Bill Clinton. You know, he was impeached by the House, but not the Senate. And so it's not unforeseen in our history mm-hmm. that could be the direction something goes. So it's really fascinating to think about the way the system plays out.
What about a third party? What if the third party has better policies, better morals, better track record than the two main parties?
Yes. I don't think there's a party that does. I think there's a candidate that does. So like Evan McMullen is running as an outsider candidate, but I think he's running as a Republican, am I right? Or is he like officially an independent,
yep.
but a conservative?
Yep.
So he's the most viable, interesting person. He's leading in Utah. He's a Mormon, 40 years old, you know, seems to have a good, sound, conservative sort of vision for the country. And I think everybody at this point is going, all right, hey, we should look at this guy. This is a viable, especially for conservatives and Christians, this is a viable person who vindicates our concerns of conscience and that we could vote for in good conscience. And there's probably not a whole lot of chance that he would win. But if you saw the article on 538 a week ago, where they said, if he wins Utah and the votes split and it goes through the Electoral College and gets kicked to the, you know, there's this long shot, dark horse scenario where it could get kicked to the House of Representatives.
If 13 states vote a certain way, it could get kicked to Congress and they'd have to vote.
Yeah. Which is fascinating because this might be unprecedented. Like it might be back to 2000 where, you know, Bush and Gore go to the Supreme Court to sort of...
Hanging chads.
Yeah, I mean, it could be another year like that. So it's going... Whatever happens in the next month of our lives is going to be an interesting experience. Mm. Let's weigh both sides of this question from a biblical perspective, guys. The value of honoring your conscience versus the value of not being fiercely individualistic and saying, gosh, we do have a responsibility to society at large. And what is that? What does that mean for a Christian when faced with the rather unsettling choices that we have in this election? Because I think what I'm saying is, okay, if conscience is the trump card, I'm voting Evan McMullen. Trump card. That was not a pun, but it ended up being
that? I feel like he stole that. I want that back.
If conscience is the number one criteria, I'm voting Evan McMullen or I'm writing in Ben Sass. I'm voting for someone that I can meaningfully, you know, that my conscience is clear on. If policy is the trump card, that's a different consideration, and it could cause me to hold my nose and vote for someone like Trump who would actually cause me a different kind of heartburn. but you know, I could honestly see myself going one way or the other depending on whether conscience or sort of the concern of the large implications of policy, which one of those things, you know, has a higher value.
Because conscious, you could do that, but the guy that you're writing in is most likely not going to win the way voting works.
Right. So this is the thing, is like, if I lean on the conscience thing, and if Christians in America, and especially evangelicals, lean on the conscience thing, I think we'll vote in ways that we can feel good about, and that's good. We will have clear consciences before the
Sleep
Lord.
Sleep better at night.
That might result in Hillary Clinton becoming president, which might mean steps backward for religious liberty. And at the end of the day, guys, who cares? Like, that Jesus is on the throne, and that's, if you know, especially going through 1 Peter, right? If that results in more suffering for us, oh, well, the Lord knows what he's doing. So the question is not how do we protect our own interests, but the question sort of is, with the responsibility we have in a democracy and the authority that's given to us, what's the right way to use that authority?
Yeah, and I think a way to maybe get inside this is start to ask, where do those things intersect and where they start to split. So what's helpful for me anyway, I don't know if this is helpful for some of our listeners, but throwing out hypotheticals to sort of see in my own mind and my own conscience where lines are. So for example, what if we were to have a major party candidate that was economically conservative and was pro-religious liberty and so many of the things that we value, but was pro-choice. And so on the one hand, for me to vote my conscience in a particular area could mean that all of these other really good policies we could miss on, but is that sort of where my conscience draws the line? And so I think as we're processing this, we have a line somewhere, right? I'm assuming. I mean, conscience is important to Christians. So to tease this out, I think we just have to consider, where is that line for us? Because ultimately, voting is not a biblical command, but as far as having a conscience that is clear before the Lord, that is captive to the Word of God, captive to biblical authority, that I can make a case for from Scripture.
Well, that's an important point to make, though, is that voting isn't, like, abstaining from voting is not a sin.
Right.
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 So now
can't whine too much about it.
Right. I think it's a responsibility that we need to take quite seriously, given the influence the Lord has given us in a democracy. So not voting should be done not flippantly, but with very careful thought. But it's important that you say that, Chris, because I just think there's some people that feel like, well, if I don't vote, am I in like disobedience to God? Is there some compulsion that I should feel to vote? And I think, well, not necessarily, no, but there is a sense of responsibility that you should have for your country. And so this is, in our country, how we exercise that responsibility is through the voting process.
So this would be my question to guys like Eric Metaxas. Like, where is the line for you? When you're calling Christians into consider the larger scope here and go beyond just, you know, appeasing conscience, at some point, though, you to violate conscience is... It's not a good move. That's not a good play. That's dangerous. So there has to be a sense where you have to make an appeal to this broader societal concern, but at the same time still respecting conscience. And I think the way you do that is maybe laying out a thoughtful case of where that line should potentially be. I think this is the hard wrestle of this issue, but that's where I would like to see maybe a guy like Metaxas or others who are trying to make this case, like say, hey, Christians, here's where I think we should be able to, we should draw the line, or here are a few issues where we draw our line in the sand, and look, as far as Trump is concerned, we can sort of balance the both of them here, assuming that he, you know, will keep his word. But that's the way I see it at this point, as I'm sitting here processing through, like, how do you walk the line here? Because I don't think you can get away from conscience ultimately.
Let me reflect more broadly for a moment. So let me sort of take another layer up into sort of the 30,000 foot view. Let me reflect more broadly on what I think is happening culturally among Christians, which is a good thing. And that is, this electoral process, and specifically the nomination of Donald Trump, has unhinged evangelicals from the Republican Party, and sort of, I would say it this way, the religious right is all but dead. In a good way, people like Russell Moore, people like Alan Jacobs, have sort of pulled us up and said, no, we will not stand behind Donald Trump. Christians will not support a candidate like that. And so what I think that possibly does for us is it lets us regain a little bit of a prophetic voice in society. Because I don't think, especially in evangelical Christianity, I don't think we're seen as prophetic, because the broader culture sort of sees us as the people who are just going to vote for the Republican candidate or the anti-abortion candidate, whoever that is. So I'm encouraged that there's sort of a new permutation of what conservative Christian political engagement is going to look like in the years to come. And it's going to look something different than, yeah, we kind of get behind whatever the sort of conservative or the Republican-ish candidate is. I think those days are over. So there's a new religious right ahead. I don't know what it looks like, but I'm excited for what that the new voice that might give us in culture. And I think, especially as I listen to thoughtful people like Russell Moore, I think what he's trying to help Christians say, in contrast to someone like Eric Metaxas, is we don't want to be the people who got Donald Trump elected. If Hillary Clinton gets elected, if we're in for 4 years more of sort of dangers to religious freedom, we at least want to be the people who can stand apart from that and say, well, that's okay with us. We'd rather have that than be behind a pervert like Donald Trump, who we sort of link arms with for purely pragmatic reasons of, well, there's a policy that we prefer, and so we're willing to identify with the devil in order to get, you know, the little piece of heaven that we want on earth.
Oh, that's a good way to put it, actually.
Yeah, and this gets right into 1 Peter. Better to suffer for doing good.
Yeah. And so that's the intriguing thing about this to me.
Additionally, what's intriguing is the fact that if Christians are unhinged politically, then that means to be a Christian in the next 4, 8, 10, 20 years is going to change. It's going to change in America.
Yes. And that's good. So
it is.
I'm in favor of that. And I, you know, as I sit here, just as an individual, I'm just, there's almost zero ways that I could pull the lever for Donald Trump in a few weeks. I just, I can't imagine myself doing that. However, I'm trying to be a thoughtful engager of the questions. And so I just feel like I'm trying to read articles like Metaxas and just say, okay, am I being naive here? Am I using conscience in ways that are unhelpful? You know, do I need to be challenged? And man, I look, as a student of the Bible, guys, the hard thing for me here is, if you read the Old Testament prophets, they're regularly convicting God's people of blindness, right? Of just like, you're not seeing what's around you, and so you sort of get lulled to sleep. And so I'm just wondering, I don't want to be that person. I don't want to be the person who sort of, in out of concern to sort of assuage my conscience and do something I feel like I can, you know, in good conscience do voting-wise, miss a way broader danger societally. And I think that, like, Metaxas is provocative, but I think that's sort of his, I think he feels like we're in a moment like, hey, the end of the republic is near. Like, this is not a moment to vote your conscience. This is like the end of America might be around the corner. Now, I'm not an alarmist, and so stuff like that just doesn't resonate with me. But in the back of my mind, I'm like, well, I guess I need to probably weigh that pretty carefully, because this is where a global perspective can be helpful, right? Because, like, I think about our brothers and sisters in Christ who live in some place, you know, where there's not a clean democratic process. And so you're never faced with a candidate that aligns with your values. It's like this murderer or this not quite as bad murderer, you know. And I think the church is flourishing all over the world in places like that. And so I can't imagine that we're the only people that are feeling the tension of like, gosh, what do I do when faced with a political process or a leader who in no way aligns with my values? I think that's probably the majority of the world. And we have a tendency probably to to be overly alarmed by that in ways that maybe others aren't.
Bob, I wrestle with the same thing in some ways when I think about this idea of Christian participation in our republic. I mean, if we're called to be citizens, good citizens of this country and really to care about what's happening culturally, then to sort of throw up our hands and say, you know, the republic's over, culture's going to hell, nothing I can do about it, I'm just going to kind of sit back and vote my conscience. When you put it like that, that troubles me. I was like, what? That seems to be almost defeatist, almost retreating from what's going on. And so I do wrestle with that. But at the same time, again, going back to scripture, I don't see a call to Christians to save a republic at any cost. That there is a sense where,
yeah, preach that.
We still are called to something very different. We're aliens, we're strangers in this world. Mm. So for us to find that as our ultimate call, while it's really hard to have to look at that situation and say, man, there doesn't seem to be any godly recourse here, and this is, I might be misunderstood. I might be actually, the finger might be pointed at me. It's like it's Christian's fault that this happened. And so there might be even more judgment heaped on us by our culture and by our world if we take this position that, look, it might mean the end of the republic as we know it. It might mean more suffering for us, but we can't get behind either of these two options, come what may. I think... Yeah, you know, I think what we're trying to say here too is even if that is ultimately what the decision that we make through our vote, that we do that humbly. We do that. We care about that. We feel in the sense of like something bad is happening and something wicked is sort of festering in our culture. And as Christians, we should be grieved by that. So, you know, setting up and just watching the whole thing burn, while that might be fun in some ways, kind of just to get cynical and go, it's all going to hell, watch it burn, let's, you know, pop some popcorn. I don't see that attitude either in scripture.
Mm-hmm. I just realized that all of our listeners are trying to discern right now who we should, if we're telling them who to vote for.
Like, yeah.
They're trying to figure out, hey, so are you saying I should vote for Trump? Are you saying I should vote for McMullen? Are you saying I can't vote for Hillary?
I think what I would
we're
say
not
to
being
that,
we're not yeah. being prescriptive listeners. We're just having a we're yeah. honestly like sitting around having a conversation, trying to sort these things through ourselves. So please don't hear any veiled endorsement of anyone, because they're actually right now we're just sort of perplexed and in a quandary and wanting to talk.
Probably
about
safe
it.
To say neither candidate has asked us to go live on the Wednesday conversation in support. But I do think there is, you do bring up a good point, Bob. You do have to think conscience. You have to think policy. You also have to think, if I don't vote, you know, I'm voting, you know,
right.
essentially.
Right.
So, you know, that probably stops you from having a piece of the conversation. And to what Chris just said, the cynicism is definitely going to hurt culture just as much as being a bigot.
I think, dialing back to a podcast we did months ago where we asked the question, you know, should Christians, you know, be never Trump? It was the hashtag never Trump thing. Is that the Christian position? And I made a case for, I don't think so. I think convictionally I'm fine with people being there. I don't think you could say that's the only place for Christians to be. And I think I would still say that. I respect Eric Metaxas, and I realize the people who align with the argument that he's making, it makes sense. It's a fair argument. Something in me, though, wants to say, I think on the other side of this election, where I want to be and where I want Cromdale Church to be and where I want the broader sort of evangelical movement of Christianity to be, is to be in a place of prophetic witness to culture. And I don't think we're there if we support a candidate like Donald Trump. I think we're there if we abstain from voting. I think we're there if we sort of go third party. I think we're there if, by and large, we have stood in a way that sort of stands apart from both major parties and says, nope, these are both jacked. And so my hope is that sort of from the ashes, if you'll remember, the case I made on that podcast, guys, was that a vote for Trump might be interesting if it burns down the system. Do you remember me saying that?
Yeah, I remember it. Yes, like it was yesterday.
And it looks like that might be, in fact, what's happening. And so the the hope I have is on the other side of this election, if a sort of robust, thoughtful conservatism rises from the ashes and gives Christians sort of a new vision for what it means for us to sort of pursue political involvement in a way that's not sort of rawly pragmatic.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So I would like to leave you with some hope. Out of Jeremiah 29, God tells his people, "But seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you into exile, and pray to the Lord on its behalf. For in its welfare you will find your welfare." So we encourage you, as you listen to this podcast, pray. Pray for God's mercy for our country. Pray for God's mercy for this world. And we look forward to the day when this is all over and Christ reigns eternally. That'll do it for this week's conversation. We hope that you join us next week as we engage this topic a little bit more.
Yay.
Yay. If you have questions for us, shoot us an email, podcast@cdomaha.com, and we'll talk to you again next Wednesday on the Wednesday Conversation.